What's good, people? We got another episode of King's Landing. You already know what it is. It's your boy, Jared King. Follow me at @_TheKing_. Go ahead, follow my brother, Brian King, at KingHead57 on Instagram and Twitter. And shouts out to the good people at Barber's Chair Network. Go ahead, follow them on Twitter and IG at Barber's Chair Net. Subscribe to the Barber's Chair Network Patreon at patreon.com/Barber's Chair Network. And visit the bcnet.com. So we are 3 weeks out from a little, probably about the time this drops, 3 weeks out from the NFL draft, everybody's favorite sporting offseason event of all time. We are wrapping up March Madness, cranking up baseball season, but nobody really cares because it's all about football and specifically Falcons football. And, you know, last week we got a chance to chat with Eric Robinson. Shouts out to Eric for coming on. This week we got the one and only Scott Karasik. And like he's always said, it rhymes with Jurassic. Correct me if I'm wrong, Scott.
You got it right, man.
You can follow him at Karasik. That is C-A-R-A-S-I-K with the S, Karasik S on Twitter. If you haven't already, he is, Scott, we go back probably a solid decade, huh? I feel like
probably
the Falcons boards. I feel like you were on the ESPN boards. I mean, we've been at it for a while, so.
A lot of different places, man. A lot of different places.
So, how you been?
I've been good. Just working a lot, bowling, and then just hanging out with the wife a ton.
Nice. I love it. So, no, that's basically our life here. I mean, my wife and I moved out here to Seattle, so I've had a couple people ask me if I'll be a Seahawks fan, and no, that's not happening. I've paid entirely too many dues to this franchise, and you know, good or bad, I am stuck with the Falcons. So,
unfortunately,
yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you know, look, I always tell people, I'm like, look, it takes a heart of gold to be a Falcons fan. You cannot, or concrete. I don't know how you want to look at it. I mean, the heartbreak that we've been through. I feel like if you've made it. If you stuck around after the Super Bowl, there's no point in switching teams. So I'm a Seattle resident, but I'm going to heckle the hell out of these Seahawks fans as long as I'm up here.
I think that's the best way to put it. If you're still around after that Super Bowl, yeah.
You should have left then. You know, if you stuck around after that, there's no point. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, we can get into it. So, you know, last week we talked about defensive prospects. I want to get you on here. I mean, you can, you know, run us down on the cap. I know you've been kind of running been resident cap guru on Twitter. Kind of update us there, and then we'll kind of just dig into the roster and some offensive prospects that we got, you know, got to look at.
So just simple cap update. The way cap works, you look at top 51 spots. Plus whatever bonuses are not in the top 51, because those are going to count regardless the way bonuses work. And then I'm going to include the 8 draft picks because we're already close enough to the draft. I got the Falcons at $9.77 million under the cap, which with where their roster is at right now is a good spot to be. They don't really need a huge signing. They don't really need to go out and make a big trade or anything. They've got a competitive roster right now to where any signing they make is going to benefit them long-term. It's going to have to be somebody that benefits them long-term, or it's going to have to be like one of those short-term signings like Lorenzo Carter has been, who earns his way into more years. You know, we might see like Rashawn Evans come back, but I don't think we're going to see anything bigger than that kind of move.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I mean, we signed, you know, Cordero mid-April this time last year for a 1-year, $3 million deal. Like you said, that turns into, you know, the extension that he got. You got Lorenzo Carter, $1 million, $3.5 million. So, yeah, I mean, I think at this point, it's still some free agents out there that are kind of worth considering. But like, I think it's more, hey, here's the deal that's out here. You can take it before the draft, or prices are dropping after the draft because everybody's going to fill their needs. So,
yep.
So I'm with you. I mean,
that's you might see a Leonard Floyd type possibly come in for like $3 million after the draft. If he's like, you know what? Well, they didn't really draft anybody. They're not going to have Ebiketti and Malone play every single snap, but they also don't want Carter out there playing every single snap. So I'll go in there. I'll rotate with Malone. Carter and Ebiketti can rotate on the other side, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good name to throw out. I'm, you know, we talked about it last week, just trying to figure out the scheme they want to run on defense. It's like, all right, cool. You know, we're used to what Pease was running, three down linemen. I know we're going to talk about offense, but you got me going defense. It's like, you know.
I'm a defensive guy by nature, honestly. So, like, talking offense, I'm just like, I'd rather talk defense myself, but.
Hey, that's how the card shook out. I mean, I'd rather talk defense another hour, but I mean, the thing is, like, the offense is largely set.
Pretty much.
But I think the fun part about what's left to add to the offense is more explosion, more speed, more excitement versus, you know, you got wide receiver one, you got tight end one. For all intents and purposes, you have RB1 with Algier. I know there is a growing contingent that is looking forward to Bijan. I don't know where you land on that. Where do you land on the Bijan scale?
I land on the Bijan scale the same way I land on the Kyle Pitts at 4, the Drake London at 8. Like, do I love the idea of it? Is this how you're supposed to build a roster? No, because fat guys win championships. However, if he's the best player available on your board, you take him. If he's the best player available and you have a plan on how to use him, then it makes sense. Like, the Falcons obviously have a plan for Kyle Pitts. They obviously have a plan for Drake London. Those are two key cornerstones of their offense. If they have a plan in place for Bijan and it's like, all right, well, Kyle's here and then London's here and then Bijan's here, but sometimes he's here and sometimes he's here and sometimes he's there. As long as you got the plan, I don't really care who you take. Just make sure that if you're taking that impact player at number 8, he's making that impact day one.
Yeah. You know, I think Bijan, I think the role that he would play is definitely quasi between what Algier is doing right now, what Cordero's doing, because he's got 1 year left on his contract. I doubt they bring him back. And so it's just one of those ones where it's like, I think Arthur Smith's building something that's positionless. Like, I think that's where he's looking to take it. I know everybody keeps going with the, you know, what he did in Tennessee, but I'm like, unless there's another Derrick Henry that pops out, maybe that's Bijan, but unless another Derrick Henry pops out, I don't know how much of what he does mirrors Tennessee.
I think with Bijan, you don't get a Derrick Henry. I think with Bijan, you get more of that Cordero Patterson.
Yeah.
In that he is more all-around kind of guy. However, his running skill, and I think a lot of people take this the wrong way when I compare him to Clinton Portis.
Throw it out there. I knew it was coming.
When you see him running behind that line, he looks like Clinton Portis. Now, I'm talking Clinton Portis in Denver when he put up 1,500 yards rushing and 12 touchdowns as a rookie. Clinton Portis in Denver as a second-year player when he put up 1,600 yards rushing and 13 touchdowns as a second-year player. I'm not knocking him calling him Clinton Portis. Yeah. Those 2 years of Clinton Portis are probably two of the best years I've ever seen a running back play in my life. Like, that's right up there with Terrell Davis's 2,000-yard season. Like, those 2 years brought me back to that.
Yeah,
and that's the scheme the Falcons run. They run the wide outside zone with their running backs.
Yeah. I mean, his second season, he did that 1,600 yards in 13 games. I mean, he was averaging 122 yards a game.
On 225 carries, right? Like,
yeah, like I was not a fan of your Clinton Portis comparison, but – after you said it, and was like, all right, like, let me actually look at it. Like, off the cuff, I was like, I love Clinton Portis, but I was like, I feel like that's selling him short. But yeah, if
he, as a runner, now if, as a receiver, he's more like McCaffrey.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a fair, I don't know if I'll say he's mildly shiftier than Clinton Portis. Like, his suddenness is unique. Like, seeing what he does in tight spaces to be 6 feet, 220, however big he is. I mean, he runs like Christian McCaffrey at times for a back.
How big do you think Clinton Portis was?
Clinton Portis was what, 5'11", 215?
5'11", 220.
Okay, yeah. So right there. So, you know, inch or two, he's basically B-John.
I mean, that's – the size is there. The power is there. Clinton had power. Clinton had speed. But it's really the schematic fit that makes me think, like, yeah, Clinton could run in any scheme. Bijan can run in any scheme. But you want to maximize him. You want him to look like Terrell Davis. You want him to look like, you know, one of the all-time greats. You put him in this outside zone scheme that Arthur Smith loves to run. I mean, I think it was like 78% of the plays they ran in the running game last year were either outside zone or an inside zone that could have been misconstrued as an outside zone because it was a bang read. Outside zone's three reads. It's bend, bang, bounce. When you got a guy like Algier, he's going to bang it in there 9 out of 10 times. I mean, and it's going to look like inside zone because he just wants to hit somebody.
Yeah. No, I get it. Like, that's where I keep coming back to. I know Falcons fans hate it, and they're like, you don't take a running back that high. And it's like, if they didn't run this game, I wouldn't pound the table for Bijan. But given the scheme that the Falcons run, and like you say, the marriage between the scheme and the runner, Bijan doesn't run for 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns as a rookie because Algier exists. But can he give me 1,500 all-purpose yards? I could see that.
So this is where I kind of see Bijan in Atlanta's offense. I see he's probably getting 150 carries.
Yep.
He's probably getting 40 catches.
Yep.
150 carries, probably 5.2 yards a carry. Do the math on that real quick. You're probably looking at about 800 yards.
Yeah, 750, 800 yards on the ground. And then 400 on top.
40 carries or 40 catches, you're probably looking at about 8 yards a catch. That's another 320, 340 right there. I mean, that's 1,100 yards and then probably 8 or 9 explosive plays in that.
Yep.
That's what you're bringing them in for. You're bringing them in for the 8 or 9 explosive plays that change your game, change your team, and bring you into that more, just that better long-term, I don't know how to put it. Like, the offense makes more sense when you have a guy like Bijan in it versus when you have a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson in it.
Yeah.
In 2024.
Yeah.
And Patterson in this situation ends up moving more to a wide receiver who will get some running back carries as opposed to the number two wide receiver. I wouldn't consider Patterson a running back if the Falcons take Bijan. I think Bijan would be the main RB2. And Patterson at that point is the RB3.
Yeah.
/ wide receiver number two.
And it's just the overall flexibility. Like, I mean, you saw it in the Niners game, you saw it in the Browns game. The floor of Arthur Smith's offense is a lot higher when you got a running back. I mean, they literally took the ball out of Mariota's hands and beat the Niners with it. Like, it's a weapon. And you take a guy like Bijan, you can run a 3 running back set with him, Cordero, and Algier, and force teams into bad personnel. Like, I think it's stuff like that, because you can – Cordero, for all, you know, should be a more of a receiver weapon in 23 than he is a running weapon.
Well, and here's the thing. You throw Jonnu Smith and you throw Kyle Pitts in there, and you're running 32 personnel.
You're running full house.
You know, you're running straight-up full house personnel, and you got – Patterson and Bijan and, you know,
Pitts and Jonnu,
and then Jonnu and then Algier, you're running 32 personnel out of a shotgun.
Yeah.
Because Jonnu's the tight end. Pitts is a wide receiver. Patterson's out there at wide receiver. Robinson's in the slot.
Yeah.
Algier's standing right next to Ritter.
Yep.
Like, that's your shotgun set right there. That's a completely different look than what anybody else can put out there. And that kind of, like, how do I defend that look?
What personnel
pops in the head of a lot of defensive coordinators the night before if you take Bijan? So, yeah, it may not make a ton of sense to go with Bijan at 8. He's not making it past 10. Eagles will take him if he's there. I mean, to me, the only reason why you're not taking a guy like Bijan, if you look at it the way that, you know, how do I attack this defense? That's where a lot of my offensive look comes in, because I prefer defense. But, like, when I look at offense, I go, how can I demolish a defense? Or how would my defense – what would keep me up at night as a defensive coordinator if I had to face this? And it's that 23 personnel set that I just explained.
Yeah.
Shoot, even a 31 personnel set, when you have London out there and just pop Pitts in there, you could run 4 wide with Algier just standing in the backfield in a pistol.
Yep.
Like, how do you defend all 5 of those guys, especially when you got a guy who runs like Algier, who's just a bowling ball with legs, the way Jamal Anderson and Michael Turner were, that just wants to run you over and run right through you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing where it's like Arthur Smith's like, all right, I can call the play, but I can't check for you. I can't make the reads post, you know, snap for you. But all right, what if I dictate personnel? What if I say, all right, I could put him in personnel conflict. And if I see these people trotting out here, here's your check. If you see more DBs and we got physicality out there, just run it, because Bijan's going to rip off 5, if not a touchdown. And it's like, all right, yeah. Now you respond heavy. I've got a tight end who's, you know, 6'5", running a 4.3. I got another tight end who's an athletic freak, split out wide. Y'all don't want to play him in space. And so that's what I think that's where he takes the offense. So, but
that's
no more Bijan talk. Let's talk about some more running backs. I mean, we were talking about, me and Brian were talking about running backs earlier today. Who else you like in the draft? We'll start with running back. So,
well, brother, I like Jahmyr Gibbs. Of course, you know, it's Roll Tide. He got a nice skill set. Of course, they're comparing him to Alvin Kamara, and I kept my eyes on him. Going back to what you and Scott were saying with having that X factor on the field like a Jahmyr Gibbs,
yep.
You know, you have that explosive factor where, let's say you come out 4 wide with a single back set, and let's say you put Jahmyr Gibbs in the slot. Then you run a jet sweep like a Deebo Samuel, and or you could run a read option off of that with, you know, Tyler Algier just being creative. And I agree with you guys as far as the mismatch of the personnel sets, and having, even with Keith Smith, like, you put Keith Smith in there and it's like, all right, Keith Smith's not just going to be there just to block, because he can make plays and surprise you. And so, you know, let's say you line him up on the line as a tight end. Let's bring Janu in the slot, slide him over, and then, you know, misdirection or, you know, jet motion or something like that. You know, I think they could be creative with a guy like him as well.
Even the jet motion alone, as a linebacker, when you look at that and you see that jet motion coming, Johnny, you're like, all right, well, I'm going to shift.
Right.
If they run that running back in just a slash that other way,
filthy.
Like, you're already out of position just following that guy. Mm-hmm. You're already in the wrong gap. You're already guarding the wrong spot. I mean, at that point, you're just like, what do I do?
Yep,
exactly.
Like, do I follow the motion? Because next time I'm not following the motion, I'm going to stay home. Well, that's when they hand it off to Johnny on that quick.
Yeah, like, we had to talk motion. I mean, we were just talking personnel. And it's like you start adding those wrinkles and you give them a shift and motion. And it's like,
and let's say, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs is probably not going to be there for us to pick. Let's say we go Tajay Spears and do that. Similar skill set.
Spears in like the third or fourth.
Right. You still get that opportunity to, you know, change the game and keep the defense off center. So, you know, that there lies some opportunity versus a back like Zach Charbonnet. You know, you're duplicating Tyler Allgeier with more, you know, a little bit of a more stiff. He doesn't have a wiggle. He doesn't have a pop that'll scare you. He's more of a power back. So, you know, I'll take that scat back, i.e. Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara. We don't have a Kamara right now. And Cordell's going to be rolling off of here soon. So we also got to replace that.
I'm a Charbonnet fan. I don't care what you say.
He makes it one dimensional. That's like adding AJ Dillon to this power offense.
Hey, call Tyler Allgeier, Aaron Jones, then. Cause I'll give you another one that I wouldn't be surprised if he's pretty decently high on the board. Israel Abanaconda from Pittsburgh.
Oh, that dude's fast though.
Once he ripped off that 4.3, he got a 40-inch vert. I mean. Yeah, I think he's a fit. Like, I do think they're going to look for more lightning. As much as I like Charbonnet, he's definitely, like, in my opinion, this year's Tyler Allgeier. Like, I think he's going to go somewhere and make people wonder how he fell.
Abanaconda's got that same kind of Portis-y type fit, though.
Yeah.
The scheme, too. That same kind of he's going to hit it. He's going to hit it hard, and he's going to fly through the gap.
Yep.
I mean,
I think they're going to add a running back. I mean, right now the running back is Tyler Allgeier and Cordero, who had a knee injury midseason, and Caleb Huntley coming back from an Achilles tear. Like, they're not rolling.
And Avery Williams, who's a converted corner, who's really just a special teamer.
Exactly.
And then some guy named BJ Baylor, who's.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I like Avery Williams, but I think Avery Williams at his peak in the offensive side of things is Antone Smith.
He's a 73
in 2014.
Yeah, I mean,
when Antone Smith had the like 20 carries and 10 catches and put up like 400 total yards and 8 touchdowns somehow, like Avery Williams' peak in offense.
So, I mean, I'm glad he doesn't fumble as well. We can keep him like Weems. He can just be our Weems.
Why not? He's a hell of a special teamer. He can tackle. Yeah. He can, you know, and then get a couple, you know, bogus plays. Just don't let Tyler Allgeier throw him into a defender the way that Michael Turner lawn darted Eric Weems at a defender one time.
You got to do what you got to do in the hole sometimes.
That's a throwback.
That's my favorite play in Atlanta Falcons history. Over any other plays when Michael Turner just threw Eric Weems like a lawn dart at a safety and then ran behind him for another 10 yards.
There's your cover art. Producer, go ahead and make your cover art. Find the pick.
There you go.
So, but yeah, no, I mean, that's just the identity that this offense is going to be. Like, it's going to be old school smash mouth. First, they're going to throw it. Second, and then when they get a lead, they're going to go right back to just forcing you to stop 200-pound backs, you know, personnel packages that you just don't know how to figure out. I mean, he was doing it last year, and it was working, you know, and that's your
trash personnel.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they just didn't have anything worth, especially once Pitts went down. Teams knew the only way they were going to ever throw the ball was to Drake London, and they were still running the ball at will. I mean, it was literally just like 8 in the box, cool. Whatever you want to do.
And this is where it comes to the offensive line. Fat guys win championships.
Like, all right.
Right, I'll say that all day.
Every time.
All right. How you feeling about the O-line? I mean, we got Jake.
Four guys are starting again, regardless. You got Jake, you got Dahlman, you got Lindstrom, you got McGarry. Those guys are all stuck.
who were we talking about the other day? It was like, what, 2 episodes ago? The young one?
Dahlman.
Yeah,
Dahlman ain't going anywhere.
I'm talking about Jalen.
Jalen Mayfield? Okay, so Jalen Mayfield may come back. He's got a shot at the starting left guard position. He's got to battle Hennessy. As the roster is right now,
ballot
doesn't mean after the draft it might not be different. Say the Falcons trade down to, I don't know, 11 to 16 range, and say Peter Skoronski's sitting right there at 11 or sitting right there at 16. And or another name, Broderick Jones, is sitting there at 11 to 16 range.
No problem.
Arthur Smith, to me, seems like a best five guys start on the line kind of guy.
Yeah.
Which tells you just how bad the personnel was back in 2021, right, that his best five guys were including Jalen Mayfield most of the time.
Oh, man.
And when you go back and you look at that roster, you're like, I understand why he was doing that.
Well, Jalen was a third string. Like, that's the thing people forget. It's like, he was never supposed to see a single snap. He's supposed to be a game day inactive every week.
Yep. Behind Josh Andrews.
Josh Andrews. And then who else was in front of him? I'm drawing a complete blank. But he was not supposed to play any snaps.
He was not.
And then it was like, so-and-so gets hurt, so-and-so gets hurt. Week one, Jalen Mayfield. And
I just want to know, what kind of draft capital is he holding? What, second round?
Mayfield? He was a third-round pick.
Third round?
But here's the thing with that I've noticed with Arthur Smith. He does not give a damn what round you were drafted in.
I see. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. Like, I'm like, all right, are we going to use him or what? Because like,
Grant was a second-round pick, and he sat his ass on the bench the whole year.
You're doggone right. I'm glad he did.
And now Richie Grant looks pretty good. And now they got Bates, and they're like, yeah, Bates and Grant. Like, that's our guys.
Exactly. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with Jalen, because this is the hole. And
this is the hole, and this is where he was drafted to be.
So how much time do we give him 2 years?
It's very possible, knowing how much Arthur Smith loves fat guys, you could see a situation where they go Broderick Jones, and Broderick Jones plays left tackle in 2023. And then,
not against it.
Or not 2023, 2024. But starts out as a left guard for a year.
And, you
and then you flip Jake and Broderick.
That's where Jake was doing his dirty work with Johnny Football at guard.
Jake played right tackle for 3 years and then moved over to left.
Didn't they put him at guard? He was at guard a little bit, wasn't he?
He was at guard for like a game because they had like 12 injuries there. And they're like, Jake, go play guard. And he was like, all right.
He can do it.
He's also the kind of guy that's like, you're paying me $28 million. Just throw me on the field. I don't care where you use me. That's one of my favorite parts about Jake Matthews.
I have been
exactly my point. He can do it.
Jake can do it. He's the game's team.
I don't think he has the anchor that you would prefer from a left guard.
No.
But I think he's got enough anchor to where he could be – like, remember when Andy Levitre was playing left guard?
Exactly.
In 2016, he could do that. This is his own scheme.
That's what I'm saying. That's all we need.
He gets to that second level. He gets to that third level in the run game. So I'm not worried about him in the run game. I think in the run game, I think like right now as a pass blocker, he's like a 75. And then as like a run blocker, he's
come on, Scott. Come on now. He can at least touch 80.
Give him an 80. All right. I'll give him an 80 as a left tackle.
Yeah.
He's like an 80.
75 is different.
But as a run blocker, he's like a 65 at left tackle.
Yeah.
But I think that flips when you –
when you bump him outside.
When you bump him inside to guard.
Oh, right. Right.
So that flips. He's not as good of a pass blocker. But right now you're getting 30 to 40 level pass blocking. So
yeah, but like the thing is, like,
it's still a massive upgrade there, and then the run blocking stays exactly the same as what you're already getting in that 80 level run blocking from left guard.
Right.
You throw Hennessy there, you throw Wilkerson there, you throw no matter who you throw at left guard this past year, you were getting an 80 level run blocker.
Right.
I mean, no questions asked, 80 level, because that's the scheme in play. That's why I'm a big believer of draft really freaking good pass blockers. Run an outside zone scheme and just teach them boys how to run block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can rock and with that's my thing is like, if you could get a left tackle that has all pro or pro bowl level talent, Jake, we can't say, oh, coming out, Jake could play all five positions if he wants. Like you said, he played guard for a game in a pinch. Jake can play left guard. If Hennessy can play left guard, Jake can play left guard, in my opinion.
If Dwayne Ledford can make Matt Hennessy look like a competent left guard for 2.5 games, he can make Jake a Pro Bowl left guard.
Exactly.
Because Jake is already like a fringe Pro Bowl left tackle.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm a big believer that as long as you keep them on the same side, just throw your best five out there. Jake, yep, to me, is a left side guy, like center to left tackle.
Yeah.
That's his half, right? Just like Lindstrom to me is center to right tackle.
Yep.
I think you could play him at any of those three spots and you'd have a starting Pro Bowl guy there with Lindstrom.
How's his brother doing? Because he was drafted last year, wasn't he?
I think his brother's with the Cowboys.
Okay. Of course, yep. DQ snatched him up. But I was going to say the hidden value that we've picked up over this offseason. I think people forget that you have to practice against your defensive line. So it's going to be some whoopings being had if they're not ready on that offensive side of the ball. So I'm curious to see how the competitive edge, you know, rises to the top and improves both sides of the ball for this team.
I just want to throw this out there because I know we talk about, like I said, fat guys win championships, and it definitely goes on both sides. But if you ever noticed what they did with the coaching staff this offseason, mm-hmm, Mario Jabril is a longtime offensive guy, right? But he's working special projects defense. And I've been trying to do some research into what that role is going to be. And essentially, from my understanding of the research into it, he's trying to figure out how to develop pass rushing lanes through the offensive line and looking at it from, this is what we would hate as an offensive lineman to get attacked with.
That's how you're supposed to do it.
So as a offensive lineman, offensive line coach, we would hate to see this look because this would throw us all out of kilter.
Exactly.
So I think that's what his role with the defense is going to be in developing that pass rush.
Who was that was coaching Julio and them? Was that Raheem Morris?
Yep. Yeah, Morris.
Same thing.
Same concept. What do you know about receivers? Both sides of the balls.
He's on the defensive side. So there you go.
But he was a corner and a safety. So what does he know about receivers?
He doesn't want to see that.
I don't want to guard against this guy running this route in this formation.
Yep.
Because that would be hell.
Yep. Exactly.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, we've spoken on this a couple of episodes, Scott, is your head coach is an offensive lineman and your D coordinator is a defensive lineman. And, like, naturally they're going to head, but, you know, in terms of scheme and practice and, like, kind of go at each other in terms of, you know, mentality, like, it helps. Like, it's not like, you know, Arthur Smith's like a former receiver and you got a D lineman coach and it's like you just mentally they think the same in terms of how they want to attack on football on the field in terms of offensive line, defensive line.
As Big E would say, big meaty men slapping meat. Like,
oh
jeez. that's a Big E from the New Day wrestling quote when he was like doing a guest commentating thing, and it's the funniest thing ever. But he was talking about, I think it was like Sheamus going against Gunther. And he's like, that's what this match is. It's just big, meaty men slapping meat. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, that's offensive linemen. Like,
nice.
Just right. big dudes crushing into other big dudes.
And chugging some beers after the game.
And chugging beers after the game if they earn it.
I know we're talking about offense. What are your thoughts on us selecting Jalen?
Oh, do it. Do it.
Now think about that defensive line with Calais Campbell and Jalen.
So here's the thing. You're gonna run
not a Calais rotation. This year.
You're gonna run a wave situation.
It's gonna be
like
filthy.
You know that Cardinals defense back in the day when Bowles was running it, right?
Right.
Where it had that strong side five tech, that strong side one tech, that weak side three, right?
Did this include Corey Peters?
This was Cordy Peters playing that one tech, but it had some big, it had Calais Campbell playing that strong side five, right?
Exactly.
So you'd have Calais Campbell rotating in with Taquan Graham in that strong side five.
Mm-hmm.
At that one tech, you'd have Onyemata and Jalen Carter.
Exactly.
Or you'd have Onyemata. I'd have Onyemata and Onyemata. I'd have Grady. I'd have Carter. Honestly, the one and the three, you just have four guys rotating. You'd have Carter, you'd have Grady, you'd have Graham, I mean, you'd have just a group of guys. Just real, honestly, you could play any of those six guys in any of those spots outside of Campbell. You want Campbell playing that five.
And you can use Grady as the chess piece to find the weak link.
Honestly, what's nice about having guys like Onyemata and having guys like Grady, and then if you bring in a Jalen Carter, Carter, you play 30% of the snaps his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you take him eighth overall, if it's a passing play or you think it's going to be a passing play, his butt's on the field. You go in, wreck people, come back out. As Roman Reigns would say, run it, you know, show up, wreck people, leave. Like,
there you go. That's all we need.
That's all you need. That's all you want Jalen Carter to do as a rookie and develop him along the way. And I think a lot of the questions about him off the field are really overblown.
Yeah.
Especially with what
the stuff that happens in the NFL. Get out of here.
Especially considering what a lot of Georgia players and coaches and all that have said about him.
Right.
Like, this is he's a great kid and And then other people are like, well, some teams are taking him off the board. I think in the grand scheme of things, he's fine.
And you can literally train, you can literally mentor him with Calais, just like how Joe Horn did with Roddy.
Honestly, you've got three built-in mentors now.
Right.
You got Calais, you got Onyemata, and you got Grady. Like, you got three guys that can show him how to play three very different positions on the line and just come in and wreck fools.
Yep.
And then he doesn't have the burden of being, oh, I'm the star right away, because we've got Grady and Campbell and Onyemata and Graham. And I think in this situation, Goldman probably would get cut after camp, and you really just run with the five guys. But five dudes that big, busting people's jaws open, that's all you really need up front.
Yeah.
Because you need speed off the edge. And I think that alone, just having those – having Campbell here, having Onyemata come in, those two guys alone massively upgrade the rotation. Getting Graham back healthy, that's going to give Ebiketie and Malone just lanes.
Ebiketie could get to the Pro Bowl off this D-line.
I think Ebiketie could – I mean, I don't know about Pro Bowl, but I think 10, 11 sacks isn't out of the question for him.
11 sacks? That should be Pro Bowl material.
Not always. Not always.
You're right. You're right.
You know, but if he's getting 11 and Malone's getting six and Carter's getting four and, you know, those all those interior guys all get five each, as a team, you're getting 40.
40, yep.
That's all I want. I want 40 sacks as a team. And then you got Luther Ellis's kid out there and Caden Ellis. You know, you got Caden Ellis and Ellis is coming in. I think Ellis plays edge, honestly.
Yeah.
I think you got Ellis and Ebiketie as the main edges, and you rotate in Carter and Malone.
Malone.
And then
Malone
Ogundeji. I think Ogundeji might be more of a defensive end with his hand in the dirt in that situation.
Yeah.
Or cut.
I was going to say.
Either way is up by me.
Yeah.
Not,
but, you know, that's the
I don't think he's good. I had like a seventh round grade on him, and he hadn't really changed my mind.
You gonna defend your boy Vail?
Oh no, man! I'm here. I'm. Not after my dog Damski, man. He's the one that put me on Ogundeji, but hey, he's a special.
Damski loves the Big Ten teams, including Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a Big Ten team.
Oh yeah,
what they are.
It's the Canadian in him, man. It's all right. I don't judge him.
Canadians are just Minnesotans 30 miles north, man. That's all they are.
He's a kooky Canuck. That's my guy, though. Yes, my guy. But no, bad look, we got just a handful of offensive positions, then we can free reign defense. I'll give you a layup. Tight ends. I haven't looked at any of the tight ends. I don't think they take one.
We don't need one. Unless
they'll bring Michael back before they spin a pick.
So I don't know if I agree there based on the contracts.
Go for it.
So you've got Kyle Pitts. He's signed for 3-4 more years.
For life.
You know, probably for life. You got Jonnu Smith, who's here for one more year in his contract. And you got John Fitzpatrick signed for two more years after this year on his sixth-round rookie deal.
Mm-hmm.
outside of that, there is not a single tight end that is on a deal that is more than 1 year in Atlanta. So while, nope, yes, they've got three guys, they don't have four, they don't have five, they don't have six, all tied up long term, and a lot of these deals are minimum deals. So yeah, they did bring back Parker Hesse, minimum deal. They did bring back this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy. All minimum deals, all kind of irrelevant minimum deals too. Like Felipe Franks, irrelevant minimum deal. Cut his ass. If Washington is there in the second, I could see them take him. If a guy like Tucker Kraft or Sam Laporte is there in the third, I could see those guys being taken. Just as comparable fits like a Jonnu is. Zach Kuntz from Old Dominion, who's like 7 foot tall.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Like that dude, I could see them taking him.
Okay.
You know, there's guys out there. Now, should they? Probably not. But when you look at the contracts, you ever hear the saying, money rules the world?
Yeah.
You're talking right. And they'll tell the story, money too. Money
rules the world.
Yeah, but
it's more likely they go tight end in the third than tackle in the first. I'll tell you that much.
No, I agree with that. I just – the way I see it kind of falling, I just don't – the class is deep. I just don't think the board will fall where that's BPA on the board. Like, even if it was Washington. I like Washington a lot. But
you got to realize they got two picks in the fourth round. And I don't know how much I can cuss here, but
– you can say whatever you want.
All right, so when you have that second pick in the round and it's three picks after your regular pick, that's your fuck you pick. You know, that's your, like, all right, well, tight end coach, who you want? Like, let's just throw it out there. Like, who's your guy, second pick in the seventh round, back to back, right? Who's your guy? Let's just draft one of your favorite guys because you're my favorite coach this year. Like, all right, you want Luke Schoonmaker from Michigan? Cool, we'll grab him. Like, you want Luke Musgrave from Oregon State, even though he was out all year? Yeah, we'll take him. Like, you just take a random dude that one of your favorite coaches likes. So tight end is not off the board, period.
You know what would be fun? Darnell Washington.
I agree. If he's there in the second, take him. Because
very fun.
We talked about those 32 sets. Exactly. What about the 23 sets where you've got – say you take Bijan and Washington, right?
A problem.
You got Bijan, you got Algier, you got Washington, you got Pitts, you got Jonnu.
This team doesn't know what it's doing. We know we're going to run the ball.
We know we're going to run the ball.
We're going to dominate in the trenches.
We know we're going to throw the ball. Ooh, with some play action. Hey. You ain't going to know who's going to be there. You can align so many different ways when you've got sets like that.
Yeah.
And no one can really match up. And you're worried about red zone, right? Mm-hmm. 23 yeah. Personnel is red zone.
That's a problem.
They're running goal line at the kickoff touchback. Right?
But the thing is, they're running goal line with four verts guys. Like, yeah, they're running goal line personnel calling four verts. Like, yeah, that's the kind of matchup nightmares that you want out there.
So I just run a quick shift.
Now
you're in empty.
Yeah, it's like
you could quick shift to empty and really mess some people up. If you have Patterson and Robinson,
that's nasty.
And you got Washington, and you got Jonnu, and you got Pitts,
or even 10 personnel,
yeah,
or two personnel,
yeah, like they don't have the receipt, they don't have the wide receivers, but they got the guys. Yeah,
we have pass catchers,
it's weapons.
We have pass catchers, exactly.
Yeah. And it's like it's about use, like. I think that's the thing. It's like everybody's like, oh, the Chiefs have been beating everybody's ass. Like, this is how you run an offense. And then, like, the Eagles is like, well, if you can't be the Chiefs, be the Eagles. And it's like nobody wanted to be the Eagles 12 months ago, 24 months ago. And it's like I wouldn't be surprised if you see everybody going to wanting to stop the run with light boxes, wanting to run split safeties over top. And Arthur Smith is forcing corners to tackle, forcing light linebackers to tackle, forcing D linemen to run stop, which we know they don't want to do. And it's like, yeah, like
line wants to run stop.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, you're putting that slow, heavy personnel on the field that oftentimes doesn't even play that much. Like
a lot of those, you're putting a third linebacker on the field. You're putting heavy D linemen on the field. Mm-hmm. You probably got safety in the box because you need to get bigger. You got corners having to actually strap up their chin strap because it's like, if I got a guard Drake London, I've got to be ready for a physical route. But if he's blocking my ass, I got to be ready.
6'5".
Yeah.
So. And that's where the Scotty Miller signing comes into play.
Yep.
Why?
Because you get into that, force him into that base set, that base box, and you trot little Scotty Miller out there, little 5'9", 4'3", Scotty Miller, put him in the slot, send him deep.
Does Scotty Miller negate the drafting of a wide receiver?
Nope. Let's get into him because I think that's – I mean, all right, Scott, contracts. We have one receiver in Drake London.
We have one competent receiver under contract for the next 2-3 years after Drake London. There ain't nobody on this roster. Ain't a single rosterable wide receiver that you want to keep past this year. I'm going to put that out there right now. They have nobody at wide receiver but Drake London.
Yep. Well, you know, people say Ritter sucks, so, you know, we got pass catchers. Get tight ends.
Yeah, we got a bunch of tight ends. We got a bunch of running backs. We don't
wingspan,
got
a wide receiver. Catch radius.
This is where I think –
if he's that sorry to y'all, then fine. We'll adapt.
I think this is where they
go out. I don't feel like he's sorry at all anyway, so.
I think they get his boy Tyler Scott.
That would make sense.
At some point in the second day, Tyler Scott, I feel like, is going to be an Atlanta Falcon.
That would make sense.
That's my calling a shot. Like, that's the pick. I think that's the third round pick, if I had to guess. And then down the line, you're going to have guys like A.T. Perry. The guys that he's going to draft are going to be tall and fast.
Yeah.
Like that Princeton kid. I don't know if I'm saying this name right. Eosivas? Andre Eosivas?
I was about to say, yeah, I don't know.
We're going
to
roll with that.
We're going to roll with that for now.
From Princeton. Like, yeah. I think that guy could end up being, like, athletically, he's Julio Jones.
Yeah. 6'4", 200.
Yeah. 6'4", 200, runs a 4.43, has a 6.85 cone, has a 39-inch vertical. Like, I'll take him on my team in a heartbeat. I don't care how tall he really is, but he's 6'3", and he's got big old hands, long arms. That's what you want for a wide receiver. You want a guy who can go up there, throw up his hand, and it looks like a damn catcher's mitt to the quarterback.
I give you run a Jonathan Mingo out of Ole Miss.
That's same guy.
Same
kind of guy.
I'm not gonna say he's AJ Brown, but. He's in that mold where it's like, you know.
We're just going to not say he's A.J. Brown.
Massive, fast. Well, I mean, Ole Miss, you know, he's in that mold that Ole Miss likes where it's like him, DK, like they're that massive. Once the ball is in his hands, good luck, corner. Like you're going to have to come up and hit this guy. So.
Yeah. And then Cedric Tillman, who I know he ran like a 4.54, but he's faster than that.
Yeah.
And he played at Tennessee.
His film is faster than that.
Tennessee producing receivers. They are making a good product. I'd also piggyback with that and go to Jordan Addison, USC.
See, Addison's one I don't like.
Really?
I don't think he's physical enough.
With a fellow Trojan?
I don't think he's physical enough for this offense. He doesn't like to get dirty and run block. He doesn't like to get dirty and, like, fight off press. Just from what I've seen on film with him, I'm not a huge fan of Addison in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Addison in general, love the kid. Think he's top two wide receiver in this draft. Addison in Atlanta, not a great fit.
Like a Frank Darby, you know, like a Zacchaeus. When you know you got to throw it.
See, but then you're tipping off the offense. Or the defense.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're in a position where you have to throw it.
Yeah.
Well, and this is why you get a guy from a school like Princeton and that Eosivas guy. No, I'm telling you, it's tough to get Princeton film, but when you know some SIDs at these D1AA schools, the FCS, if you will.
Yeah,
right.
At these D1AA schools, and you're like, hey, can I get some film from when you guys played Princeton? it's not hard to see why teams like him.
Right.
Yeah. He gets out there and he blocks. Like, he's a Princeton kid who's not expecting to go to the NFL, so he's out there just having the time of his life.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, no, I like Addison a lot. I would love to see Addison in, like, Buffalo. Like, I think that would be a fun place. I had something in that passing attack. Like, here it's like, that ain't it. I mean, you already got
it's Scottie not the right fit here.
Yeah, it's just not the right fit. I'd take JSN, but then you're having to take him at 8, and that's just
same, not same there, yeah. too. He's not yeah. a fit either.
Yeah.
So
if I'm taking Addison, I'm throwing him in Miami with Waddle and Hill.
Oh, that'd be fun. Oh, man. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
Just running crossing routes all day.
Yeah. He's routing everybody up because they got to back up with that speed. Like, that would be fun to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Like those three guys together would just demolish people. Or I'm throwing them over into Cleveland. Cross from Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
He's from Maryland. Now you gotta be cognizant of where these kids are from too now.
Send him to Pittsburgh.
The Falcons drafted Deion Jones, who's from New Orleans.
He balled out against New Orleans.
Yeah, he balled out against New Orleans. I'm just saying, like,
the Cowboys. Close to New Orleans.
If it's to me, like, the Falcons could just take their pick from all the kids from Georgia at defensive end and outside linebacker in this draft. Because then you got guys like Miles Murphy and Jalen Carter and like whether college or pro in this area, the Ojulari kid. I forget, is this one BJ or Aziz?
BJ. Yeah.
They're both the same guy, just one's a couple years older. Like, I live in Marietta, so like, we see the Marietta High School, like, it pops up on Friday night sometimes, and you're like, all right, well, I'll watch it. Like, because they're good. Yeah. I mean, there's just a lot of kids from this area. Nolan Smith, Will Anderson. Let me get all these kids from Atlanta or that played at Georgia and throw them on this team. If we could do that, I would do it. And Atlanta would have the most fearsome pass rush in the league next year. But that's not going to happen.
But I do love that Terry's making it a point. I mean, because we've complained about the Falcons culture for decades now at this point. It's never kind of come out. Like, it's never been cohesive. It's never been one. I mean, for a second, it was, what, DVD. Like, that was kind of it with Don Dick Duckett. Like,
all right.
Real.
Well, and then people worry about the culture, and then they look at Matt Ryan. And they'd be like, oh, well, he's bland and boring.
Yeah.
You realize that the old quarterback went to prison, so they had to go bland and boring.
Right. They forget about that.
Like,
and it kind of worked out.
Exactly.
And it kind of worked out. You know, Ryan might be one of the top, I'm going to sound crazy to a lot of people here, top 10 quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah, you're crazy.
You don't sound crazy to me. Look, we're not. We're
the Falcons franchise.
We're getting off Matt Ryan right
now. He's number one of all time in Falcons franchise. There ain't any
You're on point with that one.
There, like, no one really can argue that. We're going to have people say Vic, but I'm going to be like, Vic played here, what, 4 years and then went to jail?
Yeah.
Matt Ryan played here 14 years, brought us to a Super Bowl, took the team farther than Vic, is one of the top 10 passers of all time. In terms of stats, at the very least, in terms of stats, he's top 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that out there.
But
in stats, for sure.
You're talking about, like, passing yards.
Yeah, he's, like, 8th or 9th all-time in passing yards. He's, like, 8th or 9th in touchdowns. Like,
Matt's my quarterback. I'm just not an all-timer for Matt.
We're going to leave it there.
Matt got empty calorie. He got Coke 0 yards.
We're not talking about
the last 4 years of his Falcon life. Plus one.
Because I never let him talk about Matt. I never let him talk about him. No.
But here's the thing. He earned the credit. He earned all that credit between 08 and 2016, 2017, to where those last 3 or 4 years, you can be like,
chasing Drew Brees. He was chasing Drew Brees in empty calorie passing yards, man. Comeback passing yards. He had 100 yards through 3 quarters. and throw for 250 in the fourth.
See why I don't let him talk.
Talking after no, after 2008. Sure, I'll agree with you there. After 2008
until one. When did we get Matt? We get rid of Matt on
2021. After 2021, so that's 4 years. 18, 19, 20, 21. Those 4 years, sure.
Oh, you said 18. I thought you said eight. I'm sorry.
No, 2008 to 2017, that first 10 years of Matt, that wasn't empty calories.
No, that was, I agree.
That was him actually having to throw to win the games because the defense was trash.
I agree.
For 10 years, we gave him trash-ass defense.
And then we got those.
And then we still have trash-ass defense. But hopefully 2023, we don't have trash ass defense.
Oh no, we won't. Trust that.
We're at least gonna have a really good defensive line and some really good safeties, and one good corner and one good linebacker, I hope, at least.
I'll tell you one thing.
Fill in the spots with NFL average and I'm good. That's a that's an NFL defense.
Put your money on the plus on the win total. I'd say that for the Falcons. Over. Whatever Vegas puts.
Vegas is probably going to put seven.
Seven, yeah.
Over. We're going to do what we did last year with this squad.
In 2021, they had Falcons at 4.5. Falcons went 2.5 over. In 2022, they had the Falcons, I think, at 4 even.
We did 4, yeah.
I think this year they're going to have them at 7, 7.5. What's 2.5 to 3 over? 11.
Yep, 10 to 11.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the Falcons are terrible in one score games. Even last year, they weren't that great in one score games. They were like 4-6 in one score games.
Yep.
I don't think that luck changes, but I think they go 11-6 and they win a lot more two score games.
Nice. I'll take that.
You're welcome back anytime, Scott. You are welcome back anytime. No, I mean, I've been saying it since they hired him, and from jump, I was like, Falcons win 10 games in 2023. We hadn't drafted Kyle Pitts yet. Like, it's just the what they had to do to get to this point, 2023 was always the season for me. And it's like, once you get enough cap space, you got 2 years of draft picks, you should be a 10-win team. And we sniffed it this year. I mean, we lost – last second fumble in the second Saints game, you know, the interception in the Commanders game, the interception in the Rams game. You can name all of these last second where if the ball just bounces in the Falcons' favor, they're in the playoffs.
Over the fumble in the Chargers game.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah,
that would hurt. I rewatched that game the other day, and I just saw Taquan Graham pick the ball up, and I just closed the computer. I said, I don't even want to see it happen again.
And I love Taquan Graham. He's so good. And I think he's going to have a big year this year, too, because he's going to learn how to pass rush by talking with Calais Campbell.
With the vet.
Because his issue with pass rush isn't that he doesn't have the physical talent to do it, or the mental talent to do it, or the lack of good leverage. It's his hand technique.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Well, you can learn hand technique. He comes in with a good plan, like bull rush, and then sometimes I'm going to do a swim, and sometimes I'm going to try and do a cross chop on the inside. Like, the technique that he's trying to do works, but he needs to refine it and actually work on it and just – actually hit it. He needs to go to a boxing class, really, but or a wrestling class.
Yeah. No, I hope he's healthy. Because he tore his ACL midseason.
No, MCL.
MCL midseason. So it's like
MCL is like a 4-week injury.
It's not that long to bounce back from. So I hope he's like
he and Pitts had basically the same injury.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be fine. I'm not worried about those two guys.
But then I get nervous because every time they bring up Kyle Pitts, it's like, how's he doing? Oh, you know, he's working his way back, blah, 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 blah. And it was one of those ones where they considered even letting him play on it. And so it's like, all right, I mean, if it was that minor, that not minor, but, you know, if it was to the point where y'all were going to let him play on it.
That's gamesmanship.
That's yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping. Like, I hope it's just like, I'm not going to tell you what's going on with my player. So that's all.
I don't legally have to tell you anything about injuries until week one of the season. So yeah, buzz off.
I'm with it.
That's the Arthur Smith answer right there. Like, I don't have to tell you shit. He's working his way back.
I love it, too.
Kyle's working his way back. I can't be like, Kyle's fully healthy and ready to go, like, even though he probably is.
Yeah. Like, and it gives Kyle a player. I mean, Arthur does a good job of defending his players and keeping heat on him. And it's like, there's no pressure on you rushing back. So
I'll put it this way. I know I'm no Kyle Pitts, but I had the same injury he did when my junior year of college. It took about 4 weeks to get back walking, about 6 weeks to get back running, and I was good to go. And this dude's like 10 times the athlete that I'll ever dream to be.
Come on, man. Scott, elite athlete.
No, not anywhere close. I'm like, I wrestled in high school. Like, I won the intramural championship at the Citadel, and that's about it. Like,
that's better than a lot of people can say. I'm not gonna name. So, but no, I mean, I'm excited. I think we're all excited. I'm glad we didn't have to talk quarterbacks beyond Matt Ryan. I don't think there was any time needed to be spent on quarterbacks. I think we all agree that
I'll spend a couple seconds on quarterbacks. This year's quarterback class is, outside of the top five guys, is complete trash.
I was going to say it's relevant.
There's not a single draftable guy outside of Hooker, Levis, obviously Young, Stroud, and Richardson. Young, Stroud, and Richardson should all go top four. They're all worth that kind of pick. I don't think any of them fit here because Young and Stroud are going to go top three, and I'm not trading up. I don't think Richardson's a good fit here because the timeline for him to get good is the same timeline for Ritter to get good. So the timeline matches up. It doesn't make any sense. So Richardson makes no sense because of timeline. Levis is like a mid two, early three for me, that range. I don't think he's anything but like Zach Wilson, where like, he needs the perfect situation, needs to sit a year, get him a bunch of targets, get him the right coach that can teach him how to really read a defense right and make the right read, not be Jameis Winston out there, because otherwise he's going to be Jameis Winston.
Yep.
He's going to throw 30 touchdowns, but he's going to throw 30 picks.
Yep.
Like, that's Will Levis. And then you got Hendon Hooker, who I see is a long-term backup who could potentially Geno Smith once he – like fixes his ACL up. I could see him being like a Geno Smith with a cannon.
I could see that. That's a good comp for Hendon. Like,
I
don't think he's a bad prospect, but it's like, obviously what they're running at Tennessee was
Fact he's 25 and just tore his ACL, like, that's what drops him to the third round for me. Raw talent, he's a late first guy.
Yeah. I think,
but no, outside of those five guys, not a single one of these quarterbacks is draftable. Period. End of story. They're not draftable.
I agree.
Priority free agents, maybe. But if you're taking one of these other quarterbacks past these top five guys and you're expecting them to be anything more than a scout team quarterback for your team in any year of their existence, you're going to be you're in for a bad time. Like, you're going to have a bad time.
You know, you're rubbing the Stetson Bennett crowd the wrong way, Scott.
That's because Bennett's garbage. He's 26 years old, has a weak arm, has a noodle arm.
Two-time.
You watch some of his film at Georgia, and you look at it in the lens that an NFL defense coordinator would look at it and go, oh, that's a pick. 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 Oh, he missed the guy on the underneath route in the NFL. My guy's going to pick that one off.
In the words of my brother, but did you lose?
I don't care. I'm not a Georgia fan. I don't give a
winner.
Damn.
Winner. I'm not.
But here's the thing. In the NFL, Stetson Bennett is Zach Wilson.
Ooh.
Plus 4 years older.
Jeez, facts.
And 3 inches shorter. And his arm is weaker. And you wonder why I say he's undraftable.
Undraftable. Jesus.
Man. Okay, maybe if I've got like the 265th pick of the draft, Mr. Irrelevant. And I'm like, all right, well, they made Brock Purdy in, and I'm the Falcons. All right, well, come on, Stetson. You gotta invite
for the fans. He got
and drafted. I still cut him after rookie camp.
He cut him after rookie camp.
He's not worth anything more than a rookie camp invite to me. Like, that's how bad this quarterback class is. Like, you might have some, like, Malik Cunningham, right? He's going to be someone's Lamar Jackson scout team guy.
Yeah.
That's what he is. That's, yeah. And teams do scout for that. But this quarterback class is just, for use of a better word, booty cheeks. Like, it's awful. Jeez. It's just cheeks.
It's literally just Young and Stroud, in my opinion. Like, I think, like, I just,
Levis. Richardson's got all the tools.
He's got the tools, but
I don't like Levis. Levis is Jameis.
Yeah.
No, Levis is not Jameis. Levis makes some good
Levis
throws.
Is Jameis now.
Yes.
Current Jameis.
Yeah. Current Jameis.
I can go with that.
Where Jameis could be better if he was younger and not as dumb as he is, but.
Plead the fifth.
But it's like, for me, like, Richardson, yeah, he's got the traits, but I just, first off, I struggle with the whole completion percentage argument, you know, adjusted completion percentage. Cool. You don't lose to Vandy.
Thanks.
Like, it's the intangibles. You don't lose to Vandy.
That's, oh man, that's like losing to Wake Forest or Duke. Yeah, like you shouldn't do it. Even though Wake's been bad lately, but like,
yeah, like losing to Purdue, like you don't lose to the teams that you just aren't ever supposed to lose to. And like, if you're that kind of quarterback, I was live at the UT Vandy game, and I was like, Vandy's ass. Like, they shouldn't beat anybody.
Oh, Tennessee beat them like 63 yeah. to like 14. And those four were like, our third stringers are in.
Yeah.
Our fourth stringers are on defense now.
Yeah.
Like, have a touchdown.
It was, yeah.
Like, it's your senior day. Have a touchdown. Like, <your senior day. laughs> we'll give you a couple touchdowns. It's your senior day. Like, yeah, we're rivals, but you guys are trash. So.
Exactly. Like, that's where I get hung up is like, if he couldn't elevate an okay Florida team to beat Vandy, I don't know, like, traits and everything. Those traits, if they couldn't literally.
Does he have the intangibles?
Yeah, like, and that's where I just get stuck. It's like.
That's where I don't like him either.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why if he interviews well, you lost to, tell me how you lost to Vandy. And everybody's like, oh, his receivers were dropping passes. You either lead them or you make them follow. Like, and he didn't.
I have trouble with that argument for him as well, because like, you've got to lead your team. I mean, I'm just going to pull up Florida's schedule right now, because they had another just stupid loss that made no sense last year. I'm just trying to think of who it was.
And people try to compare him to Cam, and it's like, look at who got drafted on that Auburn offense when Cam took them to a national championship.
Nick Fairley. That's it.
Oh, so it's not who they lost. The fact that they needed like heroics to beat Missouri.
Exactly.
Missouri. Right.
It was rough. I mean,
the fact that they weren't even competitive against Georgia
at all.
Like, not even for a quarter.
At all. And that's a rivalry. That's circled on the calendar every year. Type of game, or like even the big run he had against LSU, everybody loves to post up, and I'm like, that's a 15 yard run in the NFL. Like, they didn't try to tackle him. Like, guys were just pushing him. They were scared to hit him, and it's like, these are guys who aren't going to play on Sunday. So yeah, it's a nice highlight.
They do, it's going to be like backup
things. Yeah, like, those are guys, like, that play is not happening on Sunday, and I'm not drafting my quarterback to run the ball 80 yards. I mean, so I'm with you. I mean, the quarterback class is a handful of guys, and why would you waste time? Just roll with
Heinicke as your QB2. Let Franks be QB3 again if you want a QB3. Like,
no, you got Woodside under contract for that minimum deal.
Yeah, you got Logan still. Like, they need to hook a fire hose up to Devin Ridder.
I'm telling you, Franks
every pass.
Franks needs to be given a bus pass and a plane ticket and whatever else he needs to just get off his team because he's useless.
Jeez. Not even for preseason?
I mean, after preseason. Let him take some hits, but then bus pass and plane ticket.
Jeez. That's tough.
You'll find I'm one of the harshest critics with certain players. Felipe, atrocious. Atrocious.
Felipe or Jalen?
Jalen who? Mayfield?
Exactly. Felipe.
I'd rather have Jalen Mayfield on my roster.
No, get out of here.
I'd rather have Jalen Mayfield.
Felipe put the team on his back in the preseason, didn't he?
Who gives a shit? It's preseason.
Game. Yeah. Jalen didn't even do nothing. He got embarrassed.
Okay. And then you can trade him to a team that actually wants him and get like a sixth. Because draft capital holds, unfortunately. You can get a six for Jalen next year if you wanted to.
I can see that.
If Jalen's trash in preseason again, you trade him for a sixth or a seventh and grab your seventh and move on. All right, sunk cost. We wasted the third. Shit happens.
So you
better to waste one third and have a really good fourth, really good fifth, really good sixth, and then, you know, if start that Schaffer kid from Georgia or start Hennessy or take a guy in the first or second round this year. Like, take the toothless kid from North Dakota in the second round.
Shout out to Cody.
Yeah, Cody Mack. I couldn't think of his name. I just pictured his face and he's missing these teeth. And I'm like, looks like a hockey player just wandered onto the wrong field. Like,
I love it. Yep, I'm with it. So, but man, no, it's been a good time. We got to do this again, Scott. We're going to have a long summer, so we might hop on and talk some Braves or something. So
we could still talk Falcons. I'm always down.
We will, man. We will. We're going to bring it back preseason, something like that. So, but it was a good time. You want to leave the people with any parting words or?
Just check out the series I've been working on for Blogging Dirty with the rankings, because I'm still putting those up. And then check out, I got an article dropping, or might have already dropped by the time this podcast has come out, 6 guys who are going to be most impacted by the free agent signings.
Oh, I like it.
There's a couple guys you may not realize are going to be on that list.
All right, I'm ready.
For the people.
Let the people know. Leave them with some suspense.
Yes, sir.
So go ahead, wrap us up then, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. This has been King's Landing Scott. Thank you for joining us, good sir.
Of course, man.
Follow Scott. Is it Karasic?
Yeah.
There you go. Boom. At Karasic S on Twitter. And follow my brother, Jared King, at __, the King, __. And your boy, Brian King, at King857. Peace. It's good time.